Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, March 2nd, 2017, and this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Thursday, everyone. It is a chilly 25 degrees with light snow here in upstate New York. And yeah, yesterday was like 68 and sunny. It felt like it was summer. Well, welcome back to winter with a rude awakening this morning. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Cone. And that was a Gerald Cone. Jared Cone. Theo, good old Peter Theo, Mr. Youngblood. Extremism. Advertising PSYOPs. DARPA, the Cortex, and Smart Dust. And we ended the show. Last couple stories we had looked at. New partnership or project that DARPA had signed up with. I'd seen it in one of my Google feeds about DARPA, and it was DARPA had partnered with this New York City ad agency that was using psychological operations, is what it sounded like, to be able to target extremists, i.e., ISIS or self-radicalized teenagers here in the United States who think they're going to go over and fight the fight, to be able to convert them. And we found out the day before when we had looked into who Jared Cone was, is what he is doing with Google and Jigsaw, what his history was, that that was something that Jared Cone and Google and Eric Schmidt had also been spending their time on as they partnered with the State Department and the Council on Foreign Relations. So it was quite disturbing. So now we got DARPA in the game too. We have spent a lot of time over the last few years looking at mental health, looking at new ways to diagnose disease, utilizing your voice patterns, looking at Tommy Insel, the former director of the National Institute of Mental Health, who has now gone to Google Verily division, and how he thinks he's going to be able to diagnose mental illness on a spectrum. So there will no longer be a DSM, Diagnostics, I think it's called Diagnostic Statistics Manual. I think that's what that stands for, DSM. But he doesn't want a DSM anymore where they can point to symptoms and say, you have this. Let's give you this drug. No, because they happen on a spectrum, which means that just about all of us potentially could have some scale, whether it be high or low or a mixture thereof, of mental disease. And with all these newfangled tools utilizing algorithms and artificial intelligence in the background to be able to analyze your voice and determine if there are any telltale signs for not only mental disease, but physical disease as well. We saw a story out of Scientific American, oh, probably 6, 8 months ago, that it talked about being able to diagnose disease just from the sound of your voice. So it wasn't just mental disease, but they have actually been utilizing voice patterns as a cue to certain mental ailments for quite a number of years. I believe schizophrenia was one of them. It had to do with the pause times between your words and the cadence that you use. And like I've said so many times before, with 400 and I don't even know, 50, 80 shows with me blabbing for an hour, and some of the older ones used to be 2 hours, I can't even imagine. I might be on the beginning of that list. For them to send that new handle robot, come pick me up and take me down to the nearest FEMA camp for reprocessing and brain reconditioning. I don't know if you guys saw that new Boston Dynamics handle bot, but it's like Atlas on wheels and better software. Looks pretty damn scary. And this thing could jump like 4 feet. And he could run, and he was like he was on a little, he could run on wheels though, like he was on a Segway, you know, those little Segway scooters. He could whip around 100 pounds right behind his back, lift it up. It was no big deal. It was frightening. So we ended the show yesterday with a story that had come out of Natural Blaze. And we've done a few shows. I did a search on Before the First Cup and Smirk Dust. And there were a couple shows that we did. One in the beginning of 2016, maybe March, April. And then one in 2015, where we dug in pretty deep. But I figured, because I don't know, Smirk Dust always gets my interest peaked. I remember reading about it in the 90s and just kind of going, whoa, this could never happen. And it was so far out of reach back then, because you literally had to make an entire computer in something that was the size of a grain of sand. I mean, that just wasn't possible back in the 90s as far as a consumer or commercial application was concerned. But guess what? That is no longer the case. The story we were reading yesterday was titled Smirk Dust, The Future of Involuntary Treatment of the Public. You know, we've talked about being able to utilize small particulates as not only diagnostic devices, but also as surveillance devices, little nanorobots in your blood. They want to be able to put you on a dashboard and monitor you for long before you get sick. I can tell you when something is going awry and then dispatch the little blood drones or whatever to fix it. I mean, that's been their wet dream of the future. And I could not even believe some of the stuff I was digging up last night, because it appears to me that while we were all sleeping, and I don't know how I missed some of these stories, maybe because it was the end of the summer and I was doing my thing, I don't know, but a lot of stuff is going on. So here we go. We have discussed, so getting these in our body, we've discussed the Internet of Things many times and the Internet of Everything. That is one of the ways. They need to get sensors on everything. They need to be able to detect what is going on in every location on the planet. HP, I talked about them. I followed them because I was an HP certified technician back in those days. And so I made sure that I knew what HP was working on, including like some of their research division. I mean, we had the inside access to engineers and everything back in those days. And they were working on something that was very similar to Smirk Dust. I see now that they have a project called Earth. Oh, hold on. I'll find it. I didn't pull it up, but I'll mention it. It's HP Smirk Dust Earth. I don't know. It's like the Earth's nervous system or something like that. But that's pretty much what it is. It's going to allow them, just like our nervous system, to be able to scan, yeah, here, the CNS, HP Labs, Central Nervous System for Earth. For Earth, people. And they are looking at selling this to corporations. So here, I just did a quick search, and here we go. On HP's website, Shell, the oil and gas company, is using the, they call it the CENSE, and that is the Central Nervous System for Earth Technology. Shell is using it for a clear picture of oil and gas reserves in the very first commercial application of the Central Nervous System for Earth Technology. HP and Shell will build a wireless sensing system to acquire high-resolution seismic data. And by vastly improving the quality of seismic imaging, these new systems will allow Shell to more easily and cost-effectively explore difficult oil and gas reservoirs. This groundbreaking solution will be delivered by HP Enterprise Services. Now, that's the group I used to do business with. We used to sell large computer systems to corporations, but I guess now they're selling these mini, mini computer systems called Central Nervous System for Earth. I mean, it's beyond frightening. And it will include HP's high-performance sensing technology. a recent breakthrough from HP Labs and the company's imaging and printing group. The solution will provide a better picture of existing and alternative energy sources, allowing Shell to perform more targeted oil exploration. And, of course, wink, release all the robots because it'll help save the environment. Now, they're dumping bazillions of these little flecks of sand into the atmosphere and into the waterways and into the forests. They're going to get into the food chain. They're going to get into the waterways. We're going to be breathing them in. And then what? Then what? Well, I think there is a plan. This is on a motherboard, Vice Magazine. The Internet of Things is just a pit stop on the way to smart dust. Ding-a-ling-a-ling. I've been saying this for a long time. Kind of been interweaving the two, but I always thought that was the way we were going to get the Internet of Everything. Was to have smart dust everywhere. Well, let's check this out. Over the next decade or so, we can expect to see general purpose computing, sensors, and wireless networking all bundled up in a millimeter scale sensor moat, kind of like a dust moat, but it's electronic, that can drift in the air currents around us. Now, if anyone remembers the very first, before the first cups, maybe not the very, some of those I didn't even record, but some of the very first times, let's say, that I was on the radio, I was questioning, like, whether or not they were even at that point. I knew about smart dust even then, 2010, 11. And like I said, back in the 90s, they were already talking about messing with this in the lab. But I had already postulated that maybe, just maybe, they had been dumping some of this stuff out in the upper atmosphere for one reason or another. And I'm going to tell you, in some of the stuff I was reading, they are really targeting this stuff to be like internalized Fitbits. And there were a couple articles. One was by DARPA and one was by someone else, IEEE something. And they were seriously discussing these little smart dust, smart motes as being inside of us to be able to bag, tag, and track us. So I'm very concerned because we all know how these guys work. You know, the technology is around. It's always, by the time we find out about it, it's always way years into the future. Now, look, back in those days, I was on the inside. I was in a very large global distributor that worked very closely with all these technology companies. So we're just trying to get off the ground. I mean, we're talking 1995. It's where I started in this stuff, like hands in all the way up to my shoulders. And we had a very close connection with all these manufacturers. The government was not involved. Oh, no, no. We were the geeks who would unite. But I'll tell you, they already were working on this stuff. So, I mean, let's fast forward now. We're going forward in time 18 years since then. No, more. Yeah, 18, 19, 20, 22 maybe. If we're talking 95. I don't know. It's early. 18, 22 years, whatever. 20 years or so. That we're just finding out about the full-ass ramifications of what they're going to do and what they are already doing with smart dust. Except 20 years ago, they were doing this as well. As processors get faster and smaller, we seem to reach points of inflection, and our technological progress allows us to do something that wasn't really possible before, or at least it wasn't practical. And yeah, they were extremely expensive. There's a one story talking about those memristors. You guys remember we did something on those memristors? Super, 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 super tiny little transistors that they could do all kinds of stuff with. And we saw a little memristor that they actually had little legs on. It was this tiny little nano robot thingy. But they've been talking about MEMS back in the 90s. They were experimenting with them. And that was kind of like the beginnings of smart dust. And one of the biggest blocking factors that, of course, all the computer publications were telling us why we shouldn't worry about it is because they were too freaking expensive. You know, $35,000 for a little memristor. You're not going to be making millions of them, so don't worry about it, Jenny. You don't have to raise the red alarm. So they just had people like me who were in the know, who went around for the next 20 years visiting friends unsuspecting and engaging in parties. And, you know, you get a few beers into me and I'd start talking about this stuff. Good thing I wasn't a spy. But, you know, it makes good conversation. And when you get in a state of mind like that, you're like, oh, you got to check this stuff out. We was reading about this, that, and the other thing. People wouldn't believe me. People literally thought I was a lunatic. But I have to tell you, I have had friends. I don't know. I've had friends for many, many, many years. You know, I tend not to try to burn bridges. But I've had friends, you know, that back in those days, we used to hang out back then. We still all talk, but they're like, Joel, remember when you were telling us about that stuff? And I'm like, yeah, I do. And then I start telling them about some of the new stuff that's coming and that they better go find themselves a bunker. And, you know, they get scared now. And you should be scared. You know, if you haven't seen that Handle robot, search Boston Dynamics Handle. He's a research robot. I'll put it in the notes. But that thing is beyond frightening. He is like this little packed up box in a corner. And all of a sudden, this thing gets up. And it bzz, 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 and it stands up. And it looks like it had to be at least 6 feet tall. And on wheels, and like I said, he could go forward and backward. He could lift 100 pounds, no problem, in a milk crate from behind him, balance and keep going. And then he could zoom backwards on the tires and jump 4 feet into the air and make it onto a ramp. I mean, I don't know. As I'm watching every iteration of these new robots coming, and add to that, like some of these drone swarms that they're messing with, and DARPA is part of this connected battlefield squad X stuff that they're talking about accomplishing. I gotta tell you, the window is closing. This either needs to be stopped or it's gonna stop us. They can tell you all day long that this is for the good of humanity. They can tell you all day long that all this mad science is to save you and little Johnny. But I hate to tell you, these agencies never did things for our best interest. Like I said, all this technology that's coming out of DARPA and DARPA-funded institutions is all being researched and developed for the war machine, you know, for protecting against our quote-unquote enemies. And if anyone knows anything about China, and if there's one thing that we've established about China, China is way ahead of us in a lot of things, especially like some of this mad science gene editing and cloning factories and things of that nature. But don't think that China does not have some of these same technologies. They were trying to create a division that would be kind of like a cookie cutter of our DARPA. The Chinese are smart cookies, and we keep poking them with a stick. And I don't know, I just wish we could all get along and just end all this stupid crap before, you know, it's a little too late, but it's not. And we read a story yesterday about those five neuroscientists out of St. John Hopkins Hospital who are standing up and really kind of raising the red flag how, like, just in this brain research project, and remember, there's got to be 100 different disruptive technologies. They're all coming at us full frontal. You know, they're just going to completely turn the world on its head. But at least from the brain perspective, these five neuroscientists are standing up going, hey, you forgot there are people connected to these brains. And though you guys are running around coming up with all these new cool things you could do, like wipe, insert and remove memories with flashes of light and remote control soldiers by being able to manipulate their brain chemicals, or what was the newest one about the turning mice and rodents into little killer armies that could be ubiquitous across the planet. Just with a laser beam to their head, you make them start biting and killing and turn them into predators. What is that? We've also seen them experimenting with large insects, cockroaches, moths, mosquitoes, turning them into cyborgs. You know, guys, this, we're next. We are next, us puny humans. Like I said, Elon Musk, oh, we need to augment ourselves, get our neural lace if we think we're going to compete. Otherwise, we are going to be relegated to pets or made obsolete. And that is about what is happening right now. Guys, the more I dig, the more sad I get. And I just don't know what to do about this. But Smart Dust, this is like one of those things that it's been on the horizon for a very long time. But once this stuff gets out, I mean, they have Mayhem. Mayhem is the shape-shifting immune system for the internet that we had read about last summer as part of that Cyber Grand Challenge, DARPA Cyber Grand Challenge in Vegas. And Carnegie Mellon came out on top with Mayhem. We read about Mayhem a few weeks ago, and we discovered, and not that it was done with much fanfare, we discovered that Mayhem has already been kind of sippy dripped out to some commercial clients. And Mayhem, if you remember, Mayhem didn't require any human intervention. Mayhem was a sentry. Mayhem was something that DARPA was talking about as to how they were going to save us from the insecurity of the Internet of Things. You know, damn, all these cameras. You got baby cameras and you got hackers on them. You got Barbie dolls. The hackers are getting in there too. Look at how insecure the Internet of Things is. Well, don't worry about it. We got the shape-shifting immune system. We gave $2 million prize, Carnegie Mellon, head of the whole AI pit of demons. Yes, that Carnegie Mellon where Obama went and gave his speech how AI is going to transform our nation. Carnegie Mellon now spun out a little company that is doing business with commercial entities. One of them sounded like a router vendor that I have done a lot of work understanding their products, wink, to be able to find vulnerabilities on the fly without any human intervention, patch them and fix them, thereby protecting the Internet of Things. But the scary fact of the matter is, once this software gets out on its own and starts making its own decisions without any human intervention, you need to be concerned. And we are at that point right now. There are a lot of things converging in 2017 that we need to be paying attention to. And one is that we've had three or four incidences now where AI, Google's AI, their Deep Brain project in particular, but there are lots of them out there, but Google's Deep Mind, the one that Kurzweil works on, has gone out. The translation software was one and the encryption was another. And some of that Go game, which is way, way, way harder than chess. But they've been able to outsmart humans and to come up with solutions without our intervening in any way, shape, or form. Now, AI, of course, is living in the machine. Atlas is a tin can. And then we got skin jobs. And I'm going to tell you, those skin jobs, which are the merging of biology and technology, and that really is kind of what DARPA's focus is now. Remember, DARPA is building things for the war machine. They are funded by our tax dollars. DARPA has an entire biological technologies office that is focused with lots of really smart cookies, engineers, scientists, doctors, physicists, biologists, microbiologists, biotechnology people, mental health people like Tommy Insel. No, I don't know, but he probably is working with them as well. They're all in cahoots. Remember, DARPA DARPA's working with all of our universities, many of them, if they want some good-ass funding and some leading-edge projects, hospitals, and technology companies. They are all working together. But remember, they've been finding ways. Prosthetics are a big thing, and that's where some of these brain implants come in. They've had this very first time just recently. DARPA was able to come up with a prosthetic that was mind-controlled. We read a few days ago, there's all these newfangled brain implants coming that don't leave scar tissue. Thank goodness, Johnny. And we can put them in very easily. Doesn't even require us to crack your skull open anymore. And that's what's frightening. But then, here comes Smart Dust. And we find out the joke's on us. They've been working on this stuff since the 90s. And they probably, even though I postulated and somebody told me that, no, it's probably a little too heavy, they probably have been spraying it around, you know, just for testing purposes, of course. But it's gotten beyond that now. It really has. There is no more. We need better, faster, cheaper. Because it is better, faster, cheaper. And the other thing we keep forgetting is smaller or even non-existent. You don't need hulking rooms of computers that pump out huge amounts of heat like UCY's little office here. It could all be in the cloud, on demand, 24/7. Or, hey, could be in little smart motes. I had, the last time I had to get a new machine for the network, it was the Sam's machine, the machine that does a lot of the recording. Blew up on us during poor Chris Voice of Rebellion show one Sunday night. It was pretty horrible. And I needed to replace that computer. So I went out to Dell. You wouldn't even believe the size of, compared to these machines, which in here, these were old work machines that have been long depreciated. So they're probably 10, 12, 13 years old, but they still run P2, Pentium 2s. I don't know. They only need to run one application each. So there's probably five of them in here. But this little machine I got from Dell, I mean, I don't even know what the size of it would be. Like the size of a box of granola bars, maybe. That's it. That's the whole computer. And it's got some flash memory in it. It's not a lot, but it was enough to be able to get your operating system and updates and, you know, files that you wanted. But then you just plug in a USB disk or a flash drive, and there's your storage. It's I even got the memory upgrade for it, which was like $20 for an extra 2 gig of memory. So I got 4 gig of memory in there. It's got some fast little CPU, and it literally is the size of a box of granola bars. So, and those were the cheapies. I'm sure there's some that are even smaller, but it's insane. So we're at this point now where now stuff can be microscopic. So as processors get faster and smaller, we seem to reach points of inflection, and our technological progress allows us to do something that wasn't really possible before, or at least wasn't practical. We've seen this before. Computers the size of rooms, and this is exactly what I was saying, gave way to ones that fit under the desk. And in time, those two gave way to slabs of aluminum and glass that we carry around in our bags, and sure, that's tablets and phones. And then computers that fit in our pockets, and just happened to also be able to make phone calls, known as Bell's Law. So this one isn't Moore's Law. This is Bell's Law. This proposition is intimately entwined with the far more well-known Moore's Law. And while Moore's Law may be dying, and that means that they can only get so many transistors into a tiny limited amount of space, and that's why they were looking at quantum computing, because they really had to go to some new technology, but they're still forcing more circuits onto little boards and making them tinier and tinier. While Moore's Law may be dying, Bell's Law, at least for one last turn of the wheel, seems to be holding. You might think the change I'm talking about is the arrival of the much-hyped Internet of Things, but the connected devices that we see today are really, like I've said before, people, I've said this a lot of times, only the very first clumsy steps towards something else. They are called transition technology. Open your arms, get used to it, embrace the machine, because you're going to become part of it, whether or not you want to. Over the next decade or two, we can perhaps expect to see general purpose computing, sensing, and wireless networking bundled up in millimeter scale sensor motes that can drift in the air currents around us. And this dust around us will become smart. Oh, yes, just what we want. And if you think this is just a technological fantasy, it is not. As William Gibson said, and I have invoked William Gibson before, this is the very first high-tech novel I read. God, that was back in the late 80s. The story was called Neuromancer. If anyone is into sci-fi, it's a recommended read. It was long before the days of the Matrix. And he saw a lot of stuff that was coming in the future. As William Gibson said, quote, "The future is already here. It is just not very evenly distributed." Well, yeah, that's about it. The Michigan Micromote is the world's smallest computer, measuring just a couple of millimeters. It currently comes in three types, able to measure temperature, pressure, or take pictures. What? It's a couple of millimeters, and it can take pictures. Of course, they had them all connected to Wi-Fi. And at some point in the future, I just saw they set the standard, by the way, the finalized standard for 5G. So all those, what did they call them? Those little pico-satellites or micro satellites, CubeSats, that's what they were, that they were launching all over the atmosphere to be like a nervous system for space. Yeah, well, they'll be able to be connecting this internet of everything that will include you, me, all the bugs and the plants and the soil at some point in the future. So connected devices are transition technology. And of course, this idea isn't new. Chris Pister, I bet he got picked on as a kid at UC Berkeley, again, where a lot of this technology is coming out of, coined the term smart dust in the mid-90s as a part of a what? Oh, yes, ding-a-ling, DARPA research project, concluding that, quote, "We will program the walls and the furniture and someday even the insects and the dust," unquote. Now, Chris Pister, that probably was one of the most prophetic statements I have ever heard. And that was back in the mid-90s, guys. That's when I first started reading about smart dust. And maybe, just maybe, this little quote from Chris Pister is why I never forgot about smart dust all these years. Quote, I'm going to read it again. "We will program the walls and the furniture and someday even the insects and the dust," unquote. If we think ahead to the time when everything is smart and everything is networked, and when computing has diffused out into our environment, the phrase data exhaust will be not longer a figure of speech, but a literal statement. With your data, it will exist in a halo of devices surrounding you. And remember, too, we've talked about everything you've ever done online is still out there somewhere. They have been collecting data on you for 20 years, putting it in some sort of dossier. And now, yes, it will be in a halo of devices that surrounds you and goes to the cloud, tasked to provide you with sensor and computing support as you walk along, calculating constantly, consulting with each other, predicting and anticipating your needs. George Jetson world. You will be surrounded by a web of distributed sensors, computing, and data. We are on the edge of, quote, "no sparrow shall fall," unquote, computing. And inevitably, yeah, or no one will be able to get away. Computing is what I'm going to call it. Nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. And inevitably, the architectures and protocols of today's Internet of Things connected devices will heavily influence The emerging smart dust architectures, in just the same way the protocols and architectures of the other internet, the digital one, has influenced the Internet of Things. Now, here is the important question. Who will have access to these sensors 24/7 watching everything on the planet? The computing power and to the data that they generate. Well, look out, guys, because, you know, this web in the sky that the Hopi saw, I wish I knew more about that. I've read the Hopi prophecies, and people had always said, oh, yeah, it's chemtrails. I don't think that web in the sky was ever chemtrails. Though maybe if they were laying tracks of smart dust with it as well, I think the spider web in the sky is this. These CubeSats and this Internet of Everything, smart dust connecting every moat on the planet to some sort of central surveillance database. That is the spider web in the sky and in the sea, in the air, in you and me. Whether or not these architectures for smart dust networks will be peer-to-peer and make that computing power and sensing available to individuals, or whether the network architectures will centralize command and control into a few hands. And I'm going to guess, like, for right now, it probably is going to be peer-to-peer. We were reading about some of those Fitbits, and they were like, oh, privacy concern over your biometric data. So what we're going to do is just allow your Fitbit to connect to your phone, and you guys can privately exchange data just between you and your phone to keep records, wink. Now, not to say that someone couldn't go into your phone, you know, accidentally or on purpose, wink, and collect that data without your knowledge, because they most certainly could. Sure, that's somewhere in your terms and conditions with your cell provider, all in the name of cover our ass and provide information, because you might be a terror threat. Your dossier reading might be in the upper oranges heading to red. Because, Johnny, you were having evil thoughts that we detected on our smart moat dust. But, you know, they are saying that, yes, your Fitbit data will be private. But, you know, that's local area network. How long is it going to be before it is just all back-ended to your wireless router? Maybe it won't even have to be to wireless routers anymore once we have these CubeSats and 5G everywhere. It might just be ubiquitous wireless in the sky. Bzz, everything just feeds to the cloud based on your IP address and gets funneled to your account that anyone could just punch in your social security number or your face scan, and it pulls up everything there is to know about you. The diffusion of computing into the environment. And that is what it's going to be. The diffusion of computing into the environment, whether you like it or not, will mean not just that computing power is always available, but that this computing power offers the possibility of continuous, ding, ding, monitoring and surveillance. And if you think about the kinds of information that today we approximate, determined by polling and sampling, and then making calculations in the future, we won't have to calculate. We will just measure. And like I was reading, the central nervous system of the Earth, the one big project HP's working on, and in cahoots with Shell, allows them to use these sensors to determine where the best place is to drill or what the reserves look like. It's coming, people. I bet there's a lot more going on out there that we have not seen yet, but this has been here. This has been 20 years in the making. They've been experimenting with this stuff for a long time, but we're just finding out about the extent of it now. The prospect of smart dust brings the arguments around the Internet of Things into stark perspective. It makes the lack of concern around the security of our things terrifying rather than just worrying. And of course, here is the vice spin on this. It is so terrifying that we have no security on all of our little cameras in little Johnny's room that we got to launch something like Mayhem, the century of the internet, the AI that doesn't need human intervention to patch, search, and destroy. No, so let's use this as a justification to let Skynet out of the bottle. Well, while most people are missing, what most people are missing about the Internet of Things is that, sure, we can connect a bunch of things to the Internet, but that's not about that. The prospect of smart dust makes it clear that the Internet of Things is not about connecting people to things or connecting things to the Internet. It is about putting computing and sensing everywhere, including in people. And we need to build and design our things for that, because that is what is approaching. And it is approaching what? Oh, the key phrase, ding, ding, faster than you might think. How many times do they tell us that? They tell us that over and over and over again. So forget your brain implants. Forget all of these interim technologies, because I'm telling you, it is coming very quickly. Now, there was a story that came out of MIT Technology Review, and maybe I'll save some of these other stories for yesterday, because I really want to get to this one, titled, How Smart Dust Could Spy on Your Brain. Now, we've postulated this one before as well. And what concerns me even more is that we've been watching this whole development of nanomedicine and these little nanobots in your blood. I mean, now they're targeting cancer. These little nanoparticles, and oh goodness, they're finding all the ferret, some, I don't know, there was some ferrous metallic, I don't remember which one they were, a nanoparticle in people's brains everywhere. They think maybe it's coming from pollution, or hey, maybe it's coming from the smart dust being sprayed from the sky. But they're finding we all have them in our brains now. And we also discovered that the 21st Century Cures Act has a whole section on neurological surveillance. So it's got to make you put two and two together. And I get six. What about you? How smart dust could spy on your brain? MIT Technology Review. And this is a story, believe it or not, from July 16th, 2013. Already 3.5 years ago. Intelligent dust particles embedded in the brain could form an entirely new form of brain-machine interface, say engineers. Ding-ding-a-ling. So, hey guys, you know, we forgot to tell you all this time. We've been spraying this shit into the atmosphere and you've been breathing it. And remember, the best way to get this stuff across the blood-brain barrier, A number one would be in the intestine. Small intestine gets absorbed, or, and especially if you have leaky gut, that is caused by all of your environmental poisons, including glyphosate. But the other way would be up through your nostrils. The real-time monitoring of brain function has advanced in leaps and bounds in recent years. And again, remember this whole push for diagnosing mental disease on a spectrum. You know, I think, honestly, this is going to be one of the ways that they are able to take many of us out. They're going to take people like me. And this really is kind of scaring me now, because I got so many shows sitting out there and they're all over. They're going to take people like me who are trying to help people understand what is coming and understand how huge this is, how scary this should be, how people should really be paying attention, because they're not. And they're all addicted to their little devices. But that was the plan. That dopamine button is that dangling carrot that's getting us all to follow the Pied Piper right off the cliff. But their goal is to be able to manipulate, control, monitor, and surveil us 24/7, every cell in our bodies. Always remember that. That's the end result. They want to be gods. And then they want to be able to splice and dice and mix and match to make monsters we've never imagined, all in the name of warfare. I mean, this is not fantasy. I mean, that last story we read was out of Motherboard Vice. I would say that they would kind of know. Like I said, I don't know who's really funding them, and I'm assuming it is some alphabet agency in the background, because that Vice has access to information and things that I don't see anyone else getting access to. So it's pretty suspicious to me. But, I mean, you're a pretty reputable technological publication. You're not going to publish a story like that if it is not true. Okay, so don't go pointing at me. and telling me that I have some sort of mental illness on a spectrum, because I don't. This, none of this is fantasy, and it's not even nightmares anymore. This is becoming reality. So the real-time monitoring of brain function has advanced in leaps and bounds in recent years, so much so that they've put it into the 21st Century Cures Act. And that is largely thanks to various new technologies that can monitor the collective behavior of groups of neurons, such as fMRIs, magnetoencephalopathy, and PET scans as well. This work is revolutionizing our understanding of the way the brain is structured and behaves, but it also has led to new engineering disciplines of brain-machine interfaces, which allow people to control machines by thoughts alone. And like I said, that's DARPA, DARPA. With the prosthetics, they are mind-controlled prosthetic arms. And soon it's going to be for your super soldiers. Impressive though these techniques are, they all suffer from the inherent limitations, such as limited spatial resolution, a lack of portability, and extreme invasiveness. And remember, that was one of the things that they had mentioned in that 21st Century Cures Act under neurological surveillance heading, was that it was going to be non-invasive. How nice of them. Thank you. Today, Dong Jin Seo and pals at, again, the University of California, Berkeley. Remember, all of these University of California mad science developments are all falling under the watchful eye of Janet Napolitano, president of the University of California system, where she moved when she left the Department of Homeland Security. So Dong Jin So and pals at the University of California, Berkeley, reveal an entirely new way to study and interact with the brain. Their idea is to sprinkle electronic sensors the size of dust particles into the cortex and then interrogate them remotely using ultrasound. And we had found a long time ago that one of the easiest ways to get that blood-brain barrier to open up is with ultrasound. And that is pretty frightening. There was some treatment that they were doing on Alzheimer's patients. They were like, oh, let's use ultrasound, open up that blood-brain barrier, and we could shatter those Alzheimer's plaques in the brain using, and I don't know if they were using little nanobots or what the hell they were using at the time, but very specifically, it was ultrasound that opened that blood-brain barrier. This ultrasound that we can interrogate them remotely with also would power the so-called neural dust. We should find out what frequencies ultrasound fall within, because I would be very horrified if they fall within the frequencies of any of these high-powered radio towers that Google were putting up in the deserts of New Mexico for some of their new terahertz and 5G internet drones. I don't know. We should look at that, because it's kind of frightening. So each particle of neurodust, and I think actually we found that with that magneto particle that they were finding in everyone's brains. There was like a PBS clip that Pigmine had about it. I am pretty certain that that was how they moved them around for diagnostic testing, because they were using the same chemicals in the brain for diagnostic testing with some sort of ferrous oxide. And I thought they were manipulating them with ultrasound. Each particle of neurodust consists of standard CMOS circuits and sensors that measure the electrical activity in the neurons nearby. And this is coupled to a piezoelectric material that converts ultra-high frequency sound waves into electrical signals. Ding-a-ling-a-ling. So they're using piezoelectric that uses sound to make electricity. This neural dust, so you don't even have to use kinetic motion, this neural dust is interrogated by another component placed beneath the scale but powered from outside the body, and this generates the ultrasound that powers the neural dust. So they're calling this neural dust. and the sensors that listen out for their response, almost like an RFID system. This system is also tetherless. The data is collected and stored outside the body for later analysis, just like a little Fitbit. And that gets around many of the limitations that we've had before. The system is low powered, can have a high spatial resolution, and it's easily portable. It is also rugged and could potentially provide a link over long periods of time. A major hurdle in the brain-machine interfaces is that a lack of an implantable neural interface that remains viable for a lifetime. Ding, ding. But now we think we might have fixed it. The difficulty is in designing and building such a system. And today's paper is actually a theoretical study of these challenges. I'm going to tell you, this was in 2013. There are scarier stories that are just very recent. First is the problem of designing a neural dust particle on the scale of roughly 100 micrometers that can send and receive signals in harsh, warm, and noisy environments within the body. But don't worry about that, because we have kind of gotten over some of those issues. Here's a story out of now August of 2016. So let's fast forward 3 years. Sprinkling of neural dust opens the door to electroceuticals. Now, if you remember, DARPA had this whole project called ElectRx, and that's what it was all about, was electroceuticals being able to zippity-zap that vagus nerve to be able to come up with all kinds of cures for you. Well, we found a way to do it now on the QT, little tiny devices. UC Berkeley engineers, so fast forward 3 years from that last story, have built the very first dust-sized wireless sensor that can be implanted in the body, bringing closer the day when a Fitbit-like device, ding-a-ling-a-ling, could monitor your internal nerves, muscles, and organs in real time. So guys, this isn't about your blood pressure and your oxygen level. See, they even said it, that Internet of Things, right now these devices we have are just kind of like the interim to get us used to them. And that's what I was trying to tell you. This is to open your arms and embrace it, start feeding data to the machine and get used to it. Because in the future, you won't even be wearing things. They'll be integrated into your clothes. And then right after they integrate them into your clothes, it's going to be your body. Because of these battery-less sensors could also be used to stimulate your nerves and muscles. This technology now also opens the door to electroceuticals to treat disorders such as epilepsy, or to stimulate your immune system or tamp down on inflammation. The so-called neural dust, which the team implanted into the muscles and peripheral nerves of rats, is unique, and then that ultrasound is used both to power it and to read out the measurements. Ultrasound technology is already well developed for hospital use, ding ding, and ultrasound vibrations can penetrate nearly anywhere in the body, unlike radio waves. I think the long-term prospects for neural dust are not only within the nerves and the brain, but much broader, says Michael Maharbiz, an associate professor of electrical engineering and computer sciences, and one of the study's two main authors. Having access to in-body telemetry has never been possible because there has been no way to put something so super tiny, so super deep. But now I can take a speck of nothing and park it next to a nerve or organ, or put it in your GI tract or your muscle, and then read out the data. Maharbiz, neuroscientist Jose Carmina, we've read about him a bunch of times, a professor of electrical engineering and computer sciences and a member of the Helen Willis Neuroscience Institute, as well as their colleagues, reported their findings August 3rd, 2016 in the journal Neuron. These sensors, which researchers have already shrunk to a 1 millimeter sized cube about the size of a large grain of sand contains a piezoelectric crystal that converts ultrasound vibrations from outside the body into electricity to power a tiny onboard transistor that is then in contact with a nerve or a muscle fiber. A voltage spike in the fiber alters the circuit and the vibration of the crystal, which changes the echo detected by the ultrasound receiver, typically the same device that generates the vibrations. And this slight change called backscatter allows them to determine the voltage. In their experiment, they powered up passive sensors every 100 microseconds, which gave them a continual real-time readout. And while the experiments so far have involved the peripheral nervous system and muscles, the neural dust motes could work equally as well in the central nervous system and the brain to control prosthetics. And today, these implantable electrodes degrade within 1 or 2 years and connect to wires that pass through holes in the skull. But don't worry about it, because soon we will be imagining the next generation of neural dust and machine brain interfaces and make this a clinically viable technology. A sensor implanted on the peripheral nerve is powered, and it can make a little mousey move his leg. I'm looking at a picture here. So now that we have a reliable, minimally invasive neural pickup in your body, this technology could become the driver to a whole new gamut of applications and implications, things that don't even exist today. And guys, put on a seatbelt. Because now, just like we found out of MIT Technology Review, there are scientists out there at Johns Hopkins University saying that we got to be paying attention to what they are doing in the brain, because these guys are going crazy with all their new toys. And it's you and me that have literally become the guinea pig. So that's what we're probably going to be today.
Ozzy's Cape.